From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Our friends at the Geneva Music Festival have been spending the last few weeks focusing on women in classical music and jazz. As the festival enters its last weekend, artistic director Jeffrey Hurt is bringing in some friends to play a piano quintet by Amy Beach, with a little Beethoven and Mendelssohn in the mix, too. Their season may be ending, but our fun is just about to begin next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. The Geneva Music Festival is wrapping up, and our artistic director of the Geneva Music Festival, Jeffrey Hurt, and friends are here. Let me first begin by introducing all of the friends who are here. First of all, of course, Jeffrey Hurt. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for having us.
Nice to have you here. First time ever here is the second violinist, Sean Moore. Hi, Sean.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. Our pianist, who will be working very hard today, Esther Park.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And joining us, a gentleman who makes his second appearance on Backstage Pass, cellist Clive Greensmith.
Hello.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Also here, is this your first time?
Yes.
Kristen Doctor, our violist. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you.
And last but far from least, you'll hear her in the final piece, the Beethoven, is cellist Hannah Collins. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Julia. Long-time listener, first-time visitor.
Excellent. I love to hear that. So let's start off, first of all, with you, Jeffrey. Congratulations on a festival just about to wrap up another season. And you started this season off with a big grant from the Arts Works of the National Endowment Association.
That's correct. It's our second time getting that award, and we're very proud of all the people that contributed to that effort.
We should say it's significant.
It is, yeah. Very competitive grant, and I think it really goes to show what we've been doing here for 9 years now in the Finger Lakes.
$10,000, what are you doing with that?
Lots of things, but we brought 33 artists to the Finger Lakes over the course of a month this year, and that's just the logistics, the artist fees, the room rentals, fees, it all gets used, that's for sure.
So your focus this year has been women in jazz, in classical, and in the end, in bluegrass. So why did you choose to do that, Jeff?
Yep, the theme, women in music. This is our third time having a theme to our festival. In previous years, we've taken a week out of the festival to focus on a certain subset of music in depth. We started with a Latino cultural celebration. Last year, we had an African-American cultural celebration that featured African-American contributions to jazz, to classical, and even to poetry. And this year, we chose women in music. One of the missions of the music festival has been making music as accessible as it can be, and also highlighting how diverse classical music really is. And women have been one very important contributor to music that have often been neglected on the concert stage at large. I think just read this year about the Philadelphia Orchestra not including one work by a woman on their 2018-2019 season. And we also, the Finger Lakes being one of the founding places of the women's suffrage movement, it was a kind of an idea that ties very deeply into our community roots. And so it was a natural thing for us to focus on. And we took that idea and we interwove it throughout the entire festival. So,
how did you choose which women you were going to represent musically?
That was very difficult. And I have to say, even with all my years studying music and performing music, I learned so much more about women's contributions to music, particularly in the Romantic era, where it was much harder for particularly women composers to be able to practice their craft. There were so many choices out there, actually, and it was a real treat to learn a lot of this music, particularly this Amy Beach Quintet, which I had never played and never heard before I started doing my research for this.
So let's actually bring a woman into this discussion. We'll go to Kirsten to start. Kirsten, this has been a big deal these days, this discussion of a lack of female representation in classical seasons. Is this a fad? Is 6 years from now, are we going back to a bunch of dead guys?
I hope not. I hope that we're actually moving forward and that and I don't mean to, you know, make this a negative thing, but that we don't even have to have a festival about, you know, specifically saying this is women's music. Because when the last time you went to a concert that said music by white men as a feature? So I really think it's something many of the great and most played composers living today happen to be women. So let's continue the trend.
Let's actually dive into the very first piece of the day, which happens to be by Amy Beach. This is the Geneva Music Festival, and we'll be hearing the first movement of Amy Beach's piano quintet in F sharp minor. The two violinists are Jeffrey Hurd and Sean Moore. Kirsten Doctor is our violist, Clive Green Smith, the cellist, and at the keyboard, Esther Park. This is Backstage Pass.
Thank you.
The first movement of Amy Beach's Piano Quintet in F. That was played by the Geneva Music Festival guests, Jeffrey Herr, the artistic director, and violinist Sean Moore. Kirsten Doctor is the violist, the cellist Clive Greensmith, and Esther Park is the pianist. I'm Julia Figueres, and Clive, you've played any number of pieces of music. Have you ever played that one before?
This is my very first time. In fact, that was the first time I've ever played it.
Really?
Yes.
So,
very exciting.
What do you think about it?
Oh, it's a wonderful piece. It sort of glows with that wonderful early 20th century post-romantic fervor. The melodies are extremely attractive. She writes wonderfully for each instrument, and it has a special kind of flavor all of its own.
Now, I understand you have just been named as the artistic director for the Reno Chamber Festival.
Yes.
Are you taking notes?
Yes, I'm having some very important meetings with Jeff. He's going to be my advisor to keep me from veering too far off onto the from the right path, which is, as you've just heard, it's a big undertaking to run a festival. So I'm very much the novice here.
Hannah, I'm going to ask you, as you are sitting here in your chair and you're watching Clive work, are you taking notes? What is it like when you sit here and you watch a master cello to cello perform?
Oh, absolutely. I'm watching very, very closely. One thing that Jeff and I have in common is that we both studied at the Yale School of Music, where we were both fortunate enough to work with Clive. So, you know, it's always a dream to play together with your mentors and your teachers. And that's luckily what we've been able to do here.
So when you went to Yale, I should say that you didn't study, you didn't get your major in music. You got your major in biomedical engineering.
It's true.
Summa cum laude.
That's also true.
Okay. So what is that connection between biomedical engineering and your cello?
I think, you know, one of the great things about growing up here in the Finger Lakes, and, you know, I was lucky enough to be surrounded by a lot of people I admire. My grandfather and great-grandfather are family doctors in Avon, New York, in Livingston County. My father's a physician in Geneva, and my sister's a pediatrician in Rochester. So there's definitely a strong scientific side of the family. And my mother is also a scientist, but a concert pianist. So there's a, you know, there were those two worlds around me the whole time. And I was lucky enough to find friends like Jeff and other people in the community who also appreciate those things and that really sent me on a path.
So what was that moment when you have your degree in biomedical engineering, but you're not going to get your master's in it? You went to music instead. So in your mind, was there that moment where you said, no, now this is what I have to do?
I think I had the opportunity to play a lot. I'm obsessed with chamber music, so while I was an undergraduate studying science, I was playing as much chamber music as possible. And it just so happens the way that the Yale University works is that right across the street from where I was studying was the professional music school. So I kept my eye on them and went to all the concerts I could go to, and I, you know, sort of got drawn across the street.
You actually have your own chamber group, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're called...
It's called New Morse Code. It's a cello and percussion duo. We've been playing together for about 8 years.
And you recorded?
Yeah, we've done a lot of video work, which you can find on YouTube, and we put out a debut album almost 2 years ago.
You also work with some of the really hot ones, the Knights. They're very hot. A Far Cry. I love A Far Cry. What is it like working with those groups?
Just constant inspiration. I think I'm always drawn towards people who just fall in love with music, you know? So all the members of those groups are all constantly looking around, finding new people to collaborate with. I recently was with the Knights when they were playing with Kenan Azme, this Syrian clarinetist who's amazing, and A Far Cry. I was with them when they played at Cornell recently with Simona Dinnerstein, and I think That's a very, very vibrant part of the music world right now, is finding these new collaboration opportunities.
Do they call you or you call them?
Both. A little bit of both. Yeah.
please hire me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love playing chamber music. That's just, at the end of the day, a real privilege to be able to also play constantly with different people, you know, in different settings.
Chamber music's very hot these days, and new combinations are very hot as well. So as you're scanning... You and New Morse Code are sort of scanning the horizon. What are combinations, Hannah, that you think are really attractive that need to be exploited more musically?
That's a question that I think a lot of people are going to have to work to answer. For me, it's really about who you're working with and what your goals are. So we formed the cello percussion duo not because we were interested in cello percussion music, but because my duo partner, Mike Capitello, and I were just on the same page about who we wanted to commission and how we wanted to work. So I think you'll find that happening all over the place.
Well, we'll hear your work with the Mendelssohn at the end of Backstage Pass, or the Beethoven, rather. So we look forward to that. We're back to Amy Beach. Same cast of characters, Jeffrey Hurd and Sean Moore with the violins, Kirsten Doctor, the viola, Clive Greensmith, the cello, and Esther Park, the pianist, for Movement 2 of Amy Beach's Piano Quintet in F-sharp minor on Backstage Pass. A big, beautiful slice of romantic music from Amy Beach. That's the second movement of her piano quintet in F-sharp minor, Opus 67. It's the Geneva Music Festival, and you can find out more about the festival and all the wonderful guests we have today by going to GenevaMusicFestival.com. The violinists Jeffrey Hurd and Sean Moore, Kirsten Doctor, the violist, the cellist, Clive Greensmith, and pianist Esther Park. Kirsten and Clive, you share something in common as longtime members of chamber groups. Kirsten, mm-hmm. The Cavani Quartet.
Yes.
23 yep. years?
23 years.
Did you start when you were 12?
I was 11, really. But yeah, yes. So I think they were here last year.
Yeah.
But I left the group about 3 years ago, but yeah, 23 years.
And Clive, 15 years with
the not quite. 14, I think it was in the end.
With the Tokyo String
yes.
Quartet. So when you are with chamber groups that long, how do you find continued inspiration inside of the group? Kirsten?
Beethoven, for a start. I think, you know, continuing to explore new projects, learn. There's just endless wonderful pieces of, well, all music, but I think, you know, maybe I'm biased, but chamber music, the string quartet in particular, so much wonderful repertoire based on conversation, based on sharing, and collaboration as well.
Do you remember your last concert with the Tokyo String Quartet, what it was like?
I do remember it quite clearly. It was at the Norfolk Chamber Music Festival, the Yale Summer School. It was in early July of 2013, and I remember everything that we played. We finished with the Debussy Quartet. There was Bartok 6 and a Haydn Quartet.
In your case, you took your final bows, and those were the final bows, the group
dissolved. We disbanded and retired, at that time.
Was there a hitch in your throat? I mean, that's a lot of history to walk away from.
Actually, it didn't hit me till later because the rhythms of being in a quartet are so specific. You have, the concert calendar, and inevitably you have lots of rehearsals. And it sort of struck me as I was in my new life at the Colburn School in September, October. I thought, well, where am I supposed to be? Where's the rehearsal? Where are my three colleagues? And going to the airport felt strange. You know, I was going alone to do my freelance projects. It was very odd not having three other people there.
I once had the opportunity to meet Bono, and we met him at the very end of a very long tour. And he said he got home, and at 8 o'clock at night, his energy was all revved up to go out on stage, and yet there was no stage to go out to.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that syndrome. There is an undeniable kind of, an energy and an excitement about giving concerts. And those of us that played, we were lucky enough to have regular work. There's an excitement about being on stage and about every program that you play.
Do you remember your last concert with the Cavani?
I do. It was at a festival in Columbus that we did every single year together. And who wonderfully now, the new cellist of the Cavani Quartet, I met, I shouldn't say this, when he was 2 years old at that festival. His mother runs it, so it comes full circle.
How do you teach at Oberlin, and I know that one of the big things in working in a string quartet is the language that you begin to develop. How do you teach that language, Kirsten?
Wow, that's a tricky question. I have the wonderful privilege of teaching both private viola lessons and then helping facilitate the chamber music program, so I get to keep that a part of my life. I think it's just by doing it a lot and encouraging students to explore deeply the repertoire. Sometimes at Oberlin, they like to jump straight into the new music, the live composer things, and encouraging. And I think the older I get, the more I say, nope, you need to start with Haydn. That's where it all begins.
Really? Why Haydn?
Well, I mean, you know, we know him as the papa of the symphony. He wasn't necessarily the inventor of the string quartet, but he was the guy that really put it on the map of advancing. He wrote something like 60-some string quartets, and then going on, of course, to Mozart and then through Beethoven. But we look back to Haydn as the one that sort of developed this idea of conversation between four voices.
Both of you worked with some of the greatest in the business. Is there a person that you've worked with that really jumped out as that great moment, Clive? I mean, besides everybody in this room, of course. Is there like a person that you just walked away and said, well, that was a slice of heaven?
Well, we had some wonderful guest artists that we played with the quartet. But I remember the first time I met Robert Mann, who's sadly no longer with us, but our violist asked me if I was available on the 23rd of December to read string quartets with Robert Mann, who was, of course, the longtime first violinist and founding member of the Juilliard Quartet. And so I spent an evening with him. He invited, it was an annual event, and I read slow movements of late Beethoven with him. And I'll never forget, there was no choice, there was no question about how I had to play, because he was such a wonderful leader and made me feel confident about where I had to play and in what manner. And he was one of the most inspiring people I've ever come into contact with.
Now, I know you're about to play some Mendelssohn. So a quick question. There was a time when you played a cello owned by the Prince of Wales. Did you ever have to play for him to prove that you weren't wrecking it?
No. He'd sold the cello, but I did meet him, actually, yes, when his wife, Diana, was still alive. And I was presented to him, and he asked how it was feeling, how I enjoyed it. And he told me that he'd had to stop playing the cello when he joined the Navy because his bow kept hitting the starboard side.
All right. And on that note, we will sit back now and hear the man whose bow does not hit the starboard side, Clive Greensmith, the cellist, and pianist Esther Park, as we listen to A Song Without Words by Felix Mendelssohn. This is Backstage Pass.
Thank you.
From the Song Without Words, Opus 109, it's a piece by Mendelssohn, the cellist Clive Greensmith, Esther Park, the pianist. And while our two cellists, Hannah and Clive, switch places, let's talk to the two members we haven't talked to yet, our pianist, Esther Park, and the other violinist, Sean Moore. Esther, you're sitting there so quietly. You were born in Korea. You started very young. How old were you when you came to the States to study?
I came to the United States when I was 10 to actually audition for Juilliard's pre-college. I was living in a town called Busan in Korea. And at the time, my parents were actually driving me to Seoul, which is the capital of South Korea, every week, which was about 6 hours of drive one way at the time. And they were doing that for about 2 years. And then they decided, well, you know what? If we're going to do this, might as well send her to the best of the best. And there was a great opportunity to play for a faculty at Juilliard. And so they said, okay, come on over for our audition in May. And I came and I did my audition. And I was luckily invited to join the pre-college program. And ever since, I stuck to this country.
This must have been a huge culture shock for you.
At the time, I feel like, at the time, I didn't speak a word of English. And I just think I was that really excited 10-year-old who was given this exciting opportunity to study and play with the best. And I think even though I wasn't able to verbally communicate with all of my friends, I think I just really relished and really was happy to be here. And I honestly, if you ask me how I survived it, I have no idea how I did it. But here I am, and somehow those days passed, and I'm thankful to be here.
Now, Sean actually went literally in the other direction. You went west, and you live in Beijing now.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Now, is that a culture shock?
Yeah, I'd say I'm used to it. I've been there for 5 years now, but
how'd that adjustment happen?
Well, in undergraduate, I actually double majored in violin and Asian studies. So I started studying Mandarin. I always had too many interests for my own good, and I ended up taking a job to work in Beijing. And so I sort of live a double life. I freelance, and I also work and live in Asia.
Yeah, that's a long commute to get to Geneva.
Yeah. It's very much worth it, though.
So the two of you actually have some interesting experiences with different styles of teaching, because, Esther, you studied in Korea, in the U.S., and in Germany as well, right? And you have now worked in both China and in the U.S. Are the differences in teaching, and I'll start with you, Esther, are the differences in teaching remarkable?
Yes, in terms of when we go into really specifics of it, but no in terms of the passion for the music. I feel like there is a huge market for music in Asia, and there will be loads of arts high school and conservatories where, you know, you'll see these mothers just busing their children, and there's, you know, lines around the block. If there's an international competition, for example, in Sendai, I was participating, and literally there were school bus load of school children who came to watch the competition from 9 a.m. until the end, the last note was dropped. And likewise, in Germany, you know, it was, I felt like I was living in that era. I mean, I was walking the same street that Brahms was walking in Hanover, and it was very exciting and inspiring time for me, and as well as here in America.
What about you, Sean? And you were actually a teacher in China. Have you seen a significant difference in styles of teaching from here to there?
Well, for me, actually, it was... There was some familiarity when I arrived in China. They had a lot of influence from the Russian school of study, and my high school teacher was from that tradition, studied with Oistrakh. And so, you know, that side of things was familiar. But I also agree with Esther that, you know, in Asia, there's a tremendous amount of interest in classical music and halls going up everywhere. It's really a part of a young child's education. Most families will have their children study piano or violin, and so audiences are very diverse, and there's an incredible amount of interest.
For those students to come to America to study.
Well, but both, yeah, actually. I would, at the moment, that's the case, but I think things are developing very quickly in China, and I think there's a very bright future for classical music there.
Well, we'll listen to our last piece of music for this backstage pass, and it is that word that Kirsten said, Beethoven. Here is the last movement of the Piano Trio No. 5 in E-flat, and then there were three, Esther Park at the piano, Sean Moore, the violinist, Hannah Collins, the cellist, on WXXI. Thank you. The finale of Beethoven's Piano Trio No. 5 in E flat. Esther Park, the pianist, Sean Moore, the violinist, and Hannah Collins, the cellist, on Backstage Pass. Jeffrey Hurd, grab that mic. You are the perks of being the artistic director. You get the first and the last word. Women this season, next season, have you started to think about it?
We've started to think about it. It's not fully in the works yet, but it's our 10th year anniversary, so we have to do something very special. I already know that Clive's going to be back, along with Jinju Cho and Ettore Causa, who was a colleague of Clive's at Yale.
You'll be back, huh?
Apparently, yes. I'm already looking forward to it. Always love coming here.
But it'll be very exciting, I'm sure. Same time of year as always, and it's a big pleasure of mine to put this together each year.
As you've looked at this season and the arc of the season, and as that arc is beginning to come to a close, are you happy with it?
Very much. It's always a really special time of year. The people that come to Geneva to perform at our festival are both amazing musicians and amazing people. We have a really good time. I think we put on really good shows, and it's just been a real treat this season.
You grew up in Geneva, right?
I did, yes.
So this is kind of a love letter to your hometown.
That's right.
Well, I think it's a beautiful love letter, and thank you for writing it.
Thanks, Julia.
Our guests today have been from the Geneva Music Festival. We would like to thank being here, of course, Jeffrey Hurd, Hannah Collins, Kirsten Doctor, Clive Greensmith, Sean Moore, Esther Park, all coming into play. Clive, we're looking forward to having you come back maybe next year.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you. Always a pleasure to be on your program as well.
Always a pleasure to have you here. Mm. You've been listening to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Our executive producer and director is Gene Fisher. Our audio technician is Andrew Croucher with help from Lindsay Brown. And our intern is Benji Whitman. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Backstage Pass is made possible in part by a gift from Drs. Dawn and Jack Lipson to support performance, innovation, and accessibility of the arts in the Rochester community. This is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting. This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.